today we are really excited because we have our very first guest on the podcast that does not work at Homesteader. So today we are welcoming Teresa Carlson. Teresa is the Vice President of Small Business Lending at the Bancorp and is just a delightful human and just so lovely to talk to. So I'm excited for you guys to get to know her a little bit better and really grateful, Teresa, that you could make time for this. I know that you are very busy. So thank you.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
So I wanted to start because you are in the small business lending space. That's your kind of bailiwick. And I'm curious how you ended up in small business lending.
It's interesting. When I first started, it was primarily because I was a bank teller and I was working part-time in college because I thought, well, I could get off early and still go to home football games.
Still experience college.
Yeah, yeah. Still experience college. So I finished up with that and I'm still part-time as a teller. And so I needed I need a full-time job, graduated from college, got a degree in business law. And I thought, I'm going to try to go to law school. Well, then I'm like, maybe not. I like banking. I'm going to go ahead and stick with that.
I mean, I could totally see you as a really successful lawyer too, though. Right. Like, I feel like that would have fit too.
But it was, I have to tell you, the LSAT was a lot harder than I realized, to be totally transparent. But I enjoyed banking. So I started working full-time as a supervisor, kind of more from a deposit side, on the retail side of banking. Did that for a little bit. And then I thought, you know what? I need to further this banking career. And it was very retail. And I wanted to kind of understand more of the finance side of the bank. So I actually went to work for the small business lending division, but as a marketing person.
So now you are speaking my language.
Exactly.
Let's talk more about that.
Yeah. So it was interesting because they hadn't really had a marketing person. And it was just a small division, small community bank, actually in the town I grew up in, which is Fresno, California, which is in central, right in the middle of California. Mm-hmm. So I started, they let me kind of do whatever I want. They're like, hey, we haven't done this before. What are some ideas? And I'm like, okay, how do I get the small business lending division in a community market to be known? Talked to commercial realtors, you know, just started really networking around town. I was doing mailers where I would actually fold the mailers myself. I created my own mailing lists because the bank didn't really have anything. They didn't believe in buying lists at the time. So it was literally bare bones, like starting from nothing.
Yeah.
But the great thing was they let me just like try this, try that, you know.
There's so much learning in that.
Totally. Yeah. And some things didn't work, but some things really, really did. And so I kind of launched from that. So while I'm marketing, I'm like, wow, these guys are, you know, they're meeting with small business owners. And the other part of this too, though, Danielle, is my parents were small business owners at the time.
What kind of business?
So they were caterers, actually. My father was a butcher for 30 years.
Okay.
Then his company closed and moved to San Diego, and I was in high school. So they're like, no, this isn't going to work. We don't want to move her, you know, junior year. So they had been doing kind of like side catering, but when my dad decided, like, you know what, we're not going to move. We're going to go ahead and do this full time. So they really started a catering business all on their own. What reminds me about it is that, you know, they were very intimidated to go to a bank because they hadn't had to borrow money like that, you know, as a business owner.
Yeah.
They were, you know, they were regular W-2 employees. They got a residential loan for their house, you know, very kind of basic lending or borrowing, I should say. So when the catering happened, it was a completely different world for them. And they were really intimidated to go to a bank. They didn't really feel comfortable. And so it kind of sparked this thing of like, well, what is this SBA lending?
Yeah.
And that's the division I worked for at this small community bank in Fresno. And so I was like, hey, can I maybe dabble in loans? Like, you know, maybe I can generate a few here and there. I don't want to give up my marketing position, but could I maybe try this out?
You want to help people like your parents.
Yeah, exactly.
Process and need a guide.
Yes.
You know, and need someone they
can
trust.
Fact that they had gone to a bank and they were so uncomfortable. I'm like, there's got to be people just like this. And they don't know what to say. They don't know what to ask for. They need to go to a bank where they can feel engaged and people can listen to them and understand their business and really kind of understand where do they need to go? What do they need right now?
Yeah.
And so that kind of sparked this whole getting into small business lending for me because I didn't even have a finance background. And so that's kind of where it started, really. Just small business division at a small community bank, dabbling in some marketing. And then I was like, I think I can maybe do these loans if you guys teach me how to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt I could engage with a small business owner. My parents were small business owners. I kind of saw what worked, what didn't work. I had a business background. So one thing I will say, I'm glad that my parents kind of did lean on me, like, what should we do for bookkeeping? And it kind of still to this day, I work with funeral homeowners and I'm constantly saying, like, okay, what do the books look like? Mm-hmm. Because if the books aren't in order, you're not going to be bankable. It's really that simple. So we need to know where your money is. What are your accounts payables? What are the responsibilities that you need to cover on a monthly basis, regardless if you have one call that year, that month, mm-hmm. you have to be able to cover the monthly debt of operation. So those kinds of things I think have helped me, you know, really kind of get my arms around small business lending and understanding what they need to kind of move forward and continue to grow and expand.
Yeah.
So it really did start, I think, from my mom and dad.
So interesting. So what was then the leaping off point from just standard small business lending mm-hmm. to the funeral profession?
Interesting. So I was working for a bank in Fresno and got married, and then my husband moved us to LA. Hmm. So a completely different market, as you can imagine. I mean, I grew up in a small town. Now I'm in Los Angeles. So I go to work for a bank in LA, but I actually got recruited, quite honestly, to work for Live Oak. The training I got and the support that I got for Live Oak was fantastic. They truly did show me. Mm-hmm. And I am always grateful for that.
And are they solely in the funeral space or do they do other areas?
They do other areas, actually. So when I did go work for them at the time, Danielle, it was strictly for funeral. So I was able to immerse myself in the industry and understand it. The hard part for me was it was a lot of travel. My daughter was very, very young at the time. And so from a family perspective, it just wasn't working. So I actually got recruited by a bank in LA and they wanted to launch a funeral division. And I at that time I actually did all kinds of different loans, but I still really kind of kept with my funeral background that I really, that kind of foundation that I'd already had. Mm-hmm. And I just expanded from it from there. And from that bank that I actually got recruited by Bancorp almost 7 years ago. And this has become a whole different ballgame for me and I'm grateful for it.
That's so flattering when people come to you and they're like, we want to hire you, and you don't have to like send in an application or resume. You're like, yeah,
right.
Court me. That's just fine.
But you know, they needed to understand though, you know, funeral lending is very different. It's a completely different animal than any other type of industry.
How so?
So not only do you have the real estate that you're financing, but you're going to finance the goodwill. And if you as a lender do not understand the goodwill component in a funeral home transaction, you're not lending to funeral homes. It truly is that simple. So before I came to work for the Bancorp, and when we were kind of just chatting, seeing if it was a good fit, I showed them some credits of scenarios that I had done and said, listen, if you can do this and you can provide this type of financing for funeral homes, you can be a funeral home lender. If you can't, that's okay. They were like, absolutely not. We love it. We love that, you know, there's very low default rates. And the thing about funeral home borrowers, they are absolutely invested. There's nothing else that they do. They are so, I don't want to say loyal, but they're so caring to their customers that this repeat of customers, it's there. It mm-hmm. truly is. And even as a lender, I get repeat customers. Like they keep coming back to me for various ideas that they have for expansion or maybe a refi, or maybe they are going to go ahead and buy the competition because maybe they're at retirement age, you know, mm-hmm. various reasons, but it's been a great run. Bancorp has been beyond supportive, especially now that we're creating this partnership together with Homesteaders. So it's definitely taken it to the next level.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You kind of touched on this a little bit when you were talking about bookkeeping in the funeral space and
yeah.
how that's so important to be able to get access to capital. It does seem like funeral providers have a difficult time accessing the capital that they need to grow and expand their business. I'm curious, from someone who's in that space, why do you think that is?
Well, it might actually stem back to that. Let me say this. Local banks do great, great things. They provide great deposit opportunities for clients to make deposits, get good returns, merchant card services, maybe small lines of credit. They do great, great things for their community clients. But lending to funeral homes at a larger scale, it's an area they're just not versed in. So what we figured out was, you know, our borrowers, they're only getting access to capital if they can meet exactly the criteria. Okay, well, if you don't meet that criteria, you're kind of out. So then what do? They think that they're not bankable. So for us, it's become an opportunity to show them you are bankable. It's just that, unfortunately, maybe that particular local bank doesn't quite understand the industry, but we do. Mm-hmm. Let's sit down, have a conversation. I tell my clients all the time, let's just chat. Tell me what you're looking for. Tell me about yourself, and I will figure out how we get there together. So it's been a good thing for me to kind of understand their business, really dive into it, figure out, you know, what worked, what didn't work. If they made some mistakes in the past, they're not mistakes. They were trying something new. Maybe it didn't work out. That's okay. Let's continue to work with them to figure out where they want to be long term. Mm-hmm. So it's been such a rewarding thing because I've created so many great relationships. They're become friends. I mean, truly.
Yeah.
When you get so involved with someone and really helping them grow their business, you know, they're friends for life.
That's one thing that's always kind of struck me when you and I talk about the customers that you're working with and the ones that, you know, we share mutually. You have such an interesting approach to lending that it feels like it's much more like a puzzle you want to solve or, you know, a problem that you want to solve. And you have so much more creativity, whereas I think sometimes in the banking space, and I say this working at an insurance company, so we have the same sickness, but like it's easy to make decisions based on spreadsheets and based
That's
calculations.
Right.
In the funeral space, especially with funeral home lending, you can't always do that and come to the best solution.
That's right.
And that's one thing I love about you and your approach to banking is that you do really see it as kind of an opportunity to dig in and be creative. And I don't know that we see a lot of that in the space.
It is a puzzle. And I appreciate that. I really do, because it is a puzzle for me. But I think I do stem back to the very, very, very beginning where they're small business owners and I want to help them.
Yeah.
And I want them to get there. And it does change their life. I mean, a lot of people are like, oh, it's just a loan. Like, it's not just a loan. You guys, this is something that's going to make them long-term be really settled. Maybe they now have room to grow. They're expanding their operation. Maybe they didn't have a crematory before. And they're like, oh, I'm like, hey, let's build a small building. You have room right next to the funeral home. Let's do it. Make sure it's zoned.
They're building a legacy business.
Yes.
Someone just for their,
exactly.
Their generation.
Exactly. Yeah. But I pride myself in figuring out that puzzle. It is a puzzle. And every borrower, Danielle, every borrower is different. Mm-hmm. Nobody is the same. So if you don't take the time to listen to them, to understand what they need, and then I always say, okay, give me a minute to process this. Let me figure something out. I'll come back to you. We'll talk about loan structure, see if it makes sense. You know, I always tell people, I will never lend you money you don't need. That's not what this is about. I don't need to lend you money you don't need, because I would never want my mom and dad to have borrowed money they didn't need mm-hmm. at crazy rates that make no sense. You know, the bank needs to make money. Absolutely. I need to get paid, of course. But the borrower needs to be secure and happy, and that they're not knocking on my door saying, oh my gosh, Teresa, you gave me this loan. I can't afford it now.
Yeah.
Then I have failed.
A source of anxiety.
Exactly. Yeah. They need to feel good about it and happy with what they did, and that they're like, okay, I got this. Let's keep going.
Yeah.
So yeah, I do pride myself never to lend money they don't need.
I love that.
Yeah.
I feel like you're a particularly discerning human as well. Like, you're a great judge of character. I think you are so knowledgeable in the space and are able to kind of sniff out the good ones and the bad ones.
Yeah.
And so I'm always really flattered
Thank
that you chose
you.
Homesteaders for yeah. the funeral home lending program
sure.
to partner with us. I'm curious how that came to be. You know, what
sure.
led you to Homesteaders? What led Homesteaders to you?
Yeah. So I had met you guys actually many, many years ago. We've always kind of worked together and kind of giving referrals back and forth. But to be quite honest, it's about 18 months now. Almost 18 months ago.
That sounds right.
Yeah. That actually Steve texted me and said, hey, how are you? I need to speak with you. And initially.
It's never actually, hey, how are you when you're getting messages from Steve. There's always some, he has an idea.
He does. But that's
pitch.
All he said. Mm-hmm. I was on vacation with my kids and I was like, am I in trouble? Why does this guy want to talk to me? So I said, hey, actually we're up in the mountains. I'm going to take the kids down to the lake and my reception's better there. Yeah, great. No problem. Call me when you have a minute. So he does start the conversation. Hey, got an idea. What do you think?
Of course he does.
Of course he does, right? So quite honestly, I have been wanting to do something else as far as like another lending product. I couldn't quite figure out, okay, how do I get there? How do I get the bank comfortable to do that? Because I was finding clients that were exceeding the $5 million SBA limit. So it was something I kind of had in my mind. He brings it up and I'm like, let me think about that for a second. And so I said, okay, well, how do you want to lend? Do you truly want to lend? Or do you want me to lend? And then you kind of piggyback, like, how do you foresee this? No. Teresa, we want to put capital to work. We want to get money into the market for independent funeral homeowners.
Yeah.
And give them access to capital. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay, let me speak to the bank. Let me see what I can do. So it is a true partnership. It's a true participation. So when we're funding loans, we are funding loans together, truly. This is not the bank having some kind of side deal with Homesteaders. That's not what this is. This is absolutely Homesteaders is lending, the Bank Corp is lending, and it is absolutely a partnership. They support me 100%. They let me do my job. I find these loans. We talk about it. I show them term sheets. They let me do full underwriting and processing and closing of the loan because my responsibility is to perfect collateral, make sure due diligence is done, make sure that the borrower is understanding what they're getting. If they don't understand it, it's like, let's pause for a second. You're not understanding the loan. Let me explain it to you again. Ask questions. Then we close. If you don't get it, we're not closing. Yeah. So I want my customers to really feel comfortable because they're your customers too. Mm-hmm. So that relationship is so important, Danielle, that I take great pride in it. I take it as we're lending both our money. And so just because you guys take 50% and I take 50%, no. It's like I'm taking 100%, mm-hmm. period. And being responsible for that, for those funds, yeah. truly.
But I think it works really well because we have similar, our organizations have very similar missions and very similar goals. We feel very similarly about the funeral space. Like we want the funeral home to have a good financing option so they can grow, they can pay their staff well, they can serve their communities. Strong funeral providers,
exactly.
You know, create strong preneed programs, which is great for homesteaders.
Exactly.
And obviously it's great for you when they pay their loan payments.
And they pay their loan payments. Yep.
But I think beyond that, there's just this like common desire to see the funeral profession succeed. Mm-hmm. And we share that kind of mentality. And I think that's part of what makes the partnership work so well.
100%. And I think that the other thing too is that you both companies are open to like, let's get creative. How can we make this deal work? When you take loans from 5 to 20 million, it is a different situation. It is. We're having to analyze a little bit differently. They don't fit exactly in the box, but both companies are saying, hey, let's figure it out. There might be some loans that we're like, well, we're not really comfortable about it. And we have conversations with homesteaders and they'll say, okay, what is it that you don't like about it? And you guys can actually provide additional color, as I call it, for me to kind of understand a little bit more about that particular funeral home. There might be a story, Danielle, I have no idea about, right? Mm-hmm. But because it was referred to me by one of your account executives or maybe one of your regionals, they're like, oh, Teresa, let me tell you what happened. You know, unfortunately, like the father passed away unexpectedly. So the family had to regroup to continue to run the funeral home. What year was that? Right? Like that's information I didn't really know.
Yeah.
Right? Even though when I'm speaking to them, the client may not have known to tell me that, right?
It's not going
to
show up in a spreadsheet.
It's not going to show up in a spreadsheet. Exactly. But when I say, you know, something's a little bit off and they're like, oh, you know what? This happened on that year, whatever the case may be. So the other thing I have to say too, guys, is that what's been super helpful is the data that you guys have. Really giving the Bank Corp opportunity to read about all the data you're tracking, mm-hmm. all the death rates you're tracking, cremation versus traditional. I mean, it gets into the weeds.
At the national level. Not
yes.
necessarily even the
where we
level.
Would not have access to that. Mm-hmm. So I'm able to kind of tap back into that information, that data, so that the bank feels comfortable with us moving forward because I'm literally lending nationwide. So yeah, that type of data is priceless.
I think you're seeing that across all industries, all professions, that data-based decision-making is just, it's becoming kind of the bare minimum. You have to have it to be able to make good choices.
Absolutely.
In our space, we talk a lot about funeral home succession mm-hmm. because, you know, when we are looking at the funeral homes we're serving, we serve a lot of independent providers, and many of them don't have a succession plan in place. And if they are acquired by a consolidator and it happens to be one that doesn't work with homesteaders, that's a concern for us.
Right.
And we have people from in our leadership at Homesteaders who have that experience of coming from the funeral acquisition space. Steve Schaefer, of course, one of them. Will Bishop is another. And they're very, you know, they're very open about the fact that there's kind of a succession planning crisis in the funeral space.
There is.
Your perspective on like why that is such a challenge right now for funeral providers and what they could potentially be doing about it.
It is family is the issue. I know that sounds silly. It sounds a little strange saying it that way, but what I have been finding more and more is the succession planning sometimes will cause a rift in the family operations. So most funeral homes, yeah, they're pretty much family driven, right? Maybe, mom and dad are working there, their son, their daughter. Maybe one wants to work in the funeral home, maybe one doesn't, right? Well, so mom and dad start to, get older and older and older, and then it's like, now what? What do we do? So I've been working more and more that when I'm doing alone, I'm asking the question, what's the plan? What if something happens? I'm just asking. We always think, oh, it could never happen to us. It actually could. We all thought we
And
could
in
never
this
have a
space,
pandemic.
no one should ever say that because we
Exactly.
know, and every single funeral
But
provider has stories of it happening to families that they've cared for.
our owners are not actually paying attention to that. We would never in a million years thought we would have a pandemic. It's never gonna happen. It actually did. That rainy day, it actually showed up, right? And if you hadn't saved for it, in trouble, right? We're in trouble. But for succession, what I've been doing is talking to the family and say, what is the plan? Well, we eventually want our son to take over. Have you given him any ownership? Well, we own it. I'll say, okay, let's have a conversation about that. I think you're providing him ownership that now he needs to start sharing in the profit. He's going to start interfering from a management standpoint and so forth. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying is, okay, if you want me to provide financing to your son or daughter
When the
to
time
when
comes.
the time comes, to buy you, to purchase your business, wouldn't it be better for them to be able to access capital through a partner buyout than to do a straight purchase? When you're doing a partner buyout, 99.9% of the time, you are not going to participate in a down payment. If you're doing a purchase, our mentality as a lender, the borrower needs to participate some level of a down payment. Okay, even if it's mom and dad. It's a different mentality. So what I've been telling them is, listen, why not start to give a little bit of a management mentality in that, hey, listen, you have 3% ownership. Very, very
Doesn't
minimal.
have to be
Doesn't
big.
have to be big,
Okay.
but I think it starts to change the child. I know it's silly to say but it is their child, to change their mentality, to buy into it, to kind of like roll their sleeves up too. Let's get into this because now
This
they
is
have
mine.
ownership. This is going to be mine, right? Now, I also do a separate conversation where I'm like, let's have a conversation with your son. You are going to pay for this. This is not going to be an inheritance. You need to pay for things because mom and dad maybe want to move to Florida. I don't know. They have their own retirement dreams and you have nothing to do with that. So if you want to buy this, then you need to act like a person that's buying it as a buyer, not as, well, they're my mom and dad. They should just give it to me. No, that's not partner buyout. So I really encourage this type of partnership mentality to prepare them for succession planning, as opposed to just say, what's your succession plan? Well, we think this or we think that, but it's like, well, why don't we start to build the foundation for succession planning now, as opposed to when there's a crisis? I also remind them on one thing. We want our children to be prepared to take over, but if we don't start preparing them now, they're not going to be ready. Or they're going to feel slighted because you didn't believe in them then, right? A little bit of ownership goes a long way. It really, really does. And that's something I've really been trying to talk to them about. Even if they're not going to do anything right then, I planted a seed just for something for them to think about. It's kind of like our own kids. Just plant a seed, give them a little bit of information.
Water it occasionally,
I
see if it
water it
takes
again.
root.
Exactly. Exactly. Right?
My oldest is five. It very little takes root at that age,
Very
but
little.
we try so hard.
We do. I have a 16-year-old. She doesn't realize that we're talking about college, but it's like, hey, you ever thought of like checking out, a school in Indiana? Your grandpa went to Purdue. And she's like, hey, maybe we should go check it out. We should. It's just the seed. We're not going to force her to go there, but we want her to keep an open mind.
Starting to normalize having those conversations
Yes.
early because it's
Early.
so important. And I work in the planning space, I work in pre-need,
Yeah.
but planning ahead is so critical in so many aspects. And I think that's part of why a lot of funeral homeowners get in trouble is because they get older and they're in their early mid-60s and they look around, they don't have a succession plan.
That's
So they're
right.
like, I'll work a little bit longer. And then they look back at 75 and they're like,
I'm still here.
Yeah, I'm still here and I have no plan. And so having those conversations when they're 55,
that's right,
when they're 50, I mean, just at least starting to socialize the idea of I'm not going to work forever. And what does that look like for my business, my legacy, to not be here every day?
Exactly. And if you have to get them to start thinking about it, as opposed to like, oh, well, when you hit X age, you should do your succession plan. No, let's talk about it. If the kids don't want to do it, that's okay.
Yeah.
We don't ever want to force, obviously, they don't want to force their children to be in the fuel industry if they don't have the passion for it. But then what are we going to do, right?
Yeah. What are your other options?
What are your other options? Exactly. Yeah.
You work in funeral home lending, you work in the finance space, and that is an industry that has historically been dominated by men and male leaders.
That's right.
The same is true in the funeral profession. It is historically, and we're starting to see a real tide change there. You know, a lot of, I think it's, you know, like 60% of mortuary students now are female, starting in the programs. And you're starting to see kind of as those leadership transitions are happening at those independent funeral homes, more and more women in the space.
Right.
But that can be a really hard role to be in, to be emerging in that space and wanting to build a career and look around and not see a lot of people that look like you and have your experiences.
True.
And so I want your thoughts on that. As someone who's gone through that experience and has achieved incredible success in a field that's dominated by people who aren't like you.
True.
What do you say to those young women?
I will tell you that it's interesting because I have done this thing lately where I'm having Grace listen to calls I'm on when we're driving back from school. So I pick her up from school just because I work very early. And so I want to end my day with picking her up from school. And I work a little bit after school, but I pick her up. I probably have a call on the way home and she's listening. So she's asked a lot of questions about it, particularly, I mean, as an example, but I will tell you though, we are wonderful at details. I think most women are. We can get into the weeds. We focus on the details, we're pretty organized. And the one thing though, I think that I would tell a young woman that is considering this is understand the math, because if you want to eventually own your own funeral home, you're gonna need to understand the numbers, and the numbers are super important.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to mortuary college, that's wonderful. But I think that we can add some value of stating to them like, hey, maybe get a couple accounting classes, mm-hmm. you know, just to really formally, I mean, I'm coming from a different perspective because I'm in business, but I will tell you though, that Grace has asked, and quite honestly, she's going to do an internship this summer at a really great friend of mine. He's a funeral home owner. We're going to go spend a week in Boston. She'll work at a funeral home for a week. Then we're going to go to New Jersey and we're going to go work 1 week in New Jersey. I'm going to work my regular job as I just kind of hang out with her there, obviously.
Yeah.
But she's been curious about, you know, Mom, what is it that you're doing? I'm like, Grace, I'm doing funeral home lending, but there's a whole nother side. And for me, Danielle, I'm going to use it as an internship too. Because I have been to funeral homes, but I have never sat in a funeral home.
Oh, Teresa.
All day long.
You are in for an experience.
I am.
Spend any amount of time in funeral homes and you will be a very changed person.
I am. And I think it'll be beneficial for me to just see what they're doing all day long. Like, why do they take a long time to give me a loan package? Because they're working with families, right? And so I know that I'm going to be more sensitive to their time, understanding, like, how can I help them get this loan package together? Because it's important too, right? The mm-hmm. business aspect of the funeral home is just as important. I'm working with families because if the business isn't open, they're not going to be able to service families. Like, they have to tie together.
Yeah.
So I'm going to spend 2 weeks this summer.
I love this so much.
And I'm going to educate myself.
Grace.
I know. And I'm excited too.
For you too.
Yeah. I'm excited for both of us. And an interesting thing, my friends that own these two funeral homes, they're like, what do you want kiddo to see? And I said, well, we're going to just see how she feels. I want her to see every aspect. I want her to see what admin does. I want her to sit in an arrangement and see how that goes. I want her to attend a service, sit in the chapel, and we'll see where it goes from there, like how much more she wants to see. But, and I'm not sure how much I want to see quite yet, so we'll see how it goes. But that's what we're going to do this summer. And I will tell young women, go to mortuary college. It's a great profession, but you need the business aspect of it too. So keep an open mind that it's mortuary college, but needs to be a little bit of business too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's fantastic advice. Mm-hmm. I wish I had taken accounting when I was in, I was an English lit major. There were no accounting classes.
No, there wasn't.
I can do the math, but it is more of an effort for me to do it. Come naturally. Well, we end every podcast with two questions.
Okay.
Every single one of our guests answers these. So the first one is, what is giving you energy right now?
Ooh, what is giving me? Well, my family gives me a lot of energy. I know that's, I'm not sure if that's what everybody answers, but I have great support, Danielle. I really do. And when I'm working at a show, I'm here. I'm engaged with it. I have support systems at home. You know, my husband's very supportive. He's like, hey, you don't worry about Grace. I got this. My parents are beyond supportive. So I get a lot of energy from my family. I just have a really great support system. And I do enjoy my work. I don't think I would be as successful if I didn't. And I do, like, I'm having so much fun. And yeah. This new product, it's kind of giving me another gear because it's a whole other world I have not been engaged with. You know, when you do that level of lending, it's a different ballgame, but I'm having such a great time.
Awesome. I was just having lunch with a colleague and we were talking about, we both have young children and what a different experience we have when we have to travel for work, when we feel like it's covered at home.
Yes.
Compared to those times when we feel like maybe it's not. And I think that that's another great piece of advice for young women is
yes.
to make sure that you have people and an army of support if
yes.
you're going to be in a profession that requires you to not necessarily even travel, but work long hours and keep a really irregular schedule that you
that's
feel
right.
really good about, you know, what's happening at home when you're not there.
Exactly.
That someone's holding it together.
That's right. That's right. It's so important. Support systems. And I think that sometimes we try to do everything. You just can't. You cannot do everything.
And that is, let it go. Go with
let
God.
It go. Yeah, yes. Exactly. Exactly.
All right. Well, our last question is,
yeah.
what are you, I'm an English lit major and I love books so much. This one is actually kind of selfishly motivated because I like the answers, but what are you reading right now?
Okay. So side note that no one knows about me, but I am a big detective fan.
Ooh.
I'm all about the cop books.
I did not know that.
Oh my gosh. I've read like all of James Patterson, Michael
okay.
Conley.
Have you found Louise Penny yet?
No, I haven't.
I have a colleague who recommended Louise Penny. I've read her first book, but she has something like 18 books and they're
oh.
all like cop mystery. It's the same.
Love it.
Like detective in every single book.
Yes.
Same kind of small town. I think it's Three Pines. So put that on your list. But yes.
I will.
Do you like detective novels?
I love detective novels. Occasionally I throw in there a little bit of romance, but I will say I'm definitely more of, but it can't be too scary. Like, yeah, it's a little bit of a thriller, but not too much.
Yeah, not like disruptive or disturbing.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Just a
yeah.
Low-key
yeah. Low-key
suspense.
Cop book, detective book. Yeah. And actually an interesting thing. I have a colleague of mine that started working with me. She's helping me with on the leasing side of the bank stuff for funeral. And she used to be a cop. So I'm so excited because I get to hang out with Jennifer now.
I have so many questions for
I know.
You.
I have a ton of questions for her. So I was like, Jennifer, you have made my day. I always were like, I think I wanted to be a cop secretly or maybe FBI.
Mm.
But
so
I mean,
if you hadn't been a lawyer or
FBI,
a lender,
I am a cop, you guys.
A cop would be, honestly, I could see it. I could totally see it. You would be a fantastic cop. You would have, there would be no nonsense
there'd be
in your area. Like.
Funny story to end with, you guys. I told Grace one day. So we were talking and, you know, she's 16 and I said, hey, Grace, just some unsolicited advice. Okay. Like if you want to do something, you should just ask. I might say yes. I might say no, but probably going to say yes because you don't normally ask for crazy things. So I'm just telling you because trying to do something on the sly is not a good idea. I mean, I'm kind of a cop. So then she gave me this puzzled look and she goes, really? I'm like, no, Grace, I'm not a cop. She was younger, but she was like, wait a minute. Like,
did I miss part
did
of
I miss
your
part
life
of, like,
story?
What you're like, doing, Mom? Like, wait, are you a cop too? It was hilarious, Danielle. I wish you would have seen her face. It was so funny.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, that might have been my, if I had a different thing, I might have done that. But we'll
in
see.
Another life.
I'm not sure I'm that gutsy. I probably should stick with banking.
I could see it. You could be a good detective. Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Of course.
Recently become my favorite thing I get to do on my
well
job.
I have enjoyed myself so much. Thank you so much. You guys are
yeah.
beyond supportive and I'm having so much fun hanging out with all of you, so I appreciate it.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Teresa, and I hope that you are able to someday pursue your career as a cop or a detective or maybe work in a funeral home.
You never know. I'll keep you posted.
Sounds good.